This is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Mem Bet, chapter 42 of the book of Yechezkel. So Yechezkel, we are continuing with our description of the Beit HaMikdash as it's being shown to Yechezkel in this vision. And today's chapter will be somewhat less technical than the ones we've seen until now, somewhat more open to understanding, although Rashi still says about the first three psukim that he doesn't know what they're talking about. He says, actually, the quote is, and I excerpted it in my notes, "V'ani lo yachalti l'havid v'shloshen hikra'ot halalu klal." I didn't understand these three psukim at all. So I will certainly not do that much better than that, but there are several issues that come up that are useful and interesting, even if we can't make the full picture in our minds of what the Mikdash looks like. So Pasuk Aleph starts, "V'yotzi'inu l'chatzer ha'chitzonai," takes me out to the outer courtyard, "ha'derech derech ha'tzafon, v'yini l'lishka asher neged ha'gizra v'asher neged ha'binyan." El Atzafon. He brings me to the Lishachot that are in the north side of the house, Hamuvdalot, which Rashi thinks are 20 Amot away, which is 30 to 40 feet away from the Ta'im. So there's a separation, but then you have these Lishachot there. And he brings me there, this Malach, El Pnei Orech Amot Hamea Petach Atzafon Varochav Chamishim Amot, to the area where there was this area that we've seen before, 100 Amot by 50 Amot in the northern side. Neged ha'esrim asher lechatzer ha'penimi v'neged ha'ritzpa asher lechatzer ha'chitona atik al pnei atik ba'shlishim. So this is the pasuk that Rashi says he doesn't understand. He says, I don't know what the atik is. And then in the notes here, it's got that an atik is an amud. That is a column, and that they were around, they were the amudim, and they were around the various lishachot, the various rooms and chambers, and they're called elyonot because they're on the higher parts of the mountain. That's the way the Rashi has it. The JPS has that it claims that it's at right angles to the Esrim Amot, to the 20 Amot of the inner court and to the pavement of the outer court, and it rises ledge by ledge in three tiers. Right, that's that reference to Bashilishim. Bashilishim, Rashi thinks, and I think there's a Ramban elsewhere that also seems to say, that Bashilishim sounds like there were three levels of them, and there were three levels of these offices. So around the Beit HaMikdash, or separated from it somewhat on the outside parts of the courtyard, there were maybe three levels of rooms here. Pasuk Daled, "Lifnei ha'leshachot mahalach eser amot," and before the leshachot there was a pathway of 10 amot, rochav el apnimit. It was 10 amot, derech ama echad. So the JPS has it that it was a 10 amot wide, and then there's a road of one, and then it's a derech ama echad, if we can, that's a phone with openings to the, or entrances on the north side. So I think you have to choose whether the rochav el apnimit is derech ama echad. So what's the one and what's the ten, right? So again, it could be the road is ten wide, but then you have to figure out what the one ama is road, but something along the lines of it's balancing these ten ama with this one ama. And it's a pathway. Pasuk Hey, v'haleshachot ha'elyonot kitzurot. The upper rooms were shorter. Ki yochlu atikim mehina me'atachdenon mitichonot binyan. Because these pillars, these columns, were taking up space, I think. Right? They were moving from the bottom, from the middle ones to the bottom, or from the bottom ones and the middle ones into the upper ones. So therefore, they cut into the room that there was for the upper lishachot. Pasuk Vav, ki mishudashot hein nevein lehen amudim ka amudim ha'chatzirot lakein etzal me'atachtonot mitichonot me'ha'aretz. Because they have these three tiers, and there weren't the full columns like those in the lower chambers. And that's why it goes up slowly in its stages, and that's why you have less room in the top one. Meaning, I think, rather than the atikim, right, meaning Rashi said he didn't know what the atikim were, and then there was a note in the Rashi that seemed to say that it's an amud. But here you see that it can't really be an amud because we're saying there were no amudim to them. So rather, it seems like maybe the three levels rose gradually and built on each other, and that's how they got their support. And therefore the top ones had to be smaller or narrower than the bottom ones. Pasuk Zayin v'gader asher lachutz l'umata l'shachot derech hechatzer achitonel p'nei l'shachot orko chamishim ama. And then there is a wall, right, on the outer part of these, facing these lishachot, and it's out for the outer courtyard facing lishachot, and it's 50 amot long. Right, 50 amot long. So Rashi says, he thinks it's because the space in the outer space was wide, so you have a wall that has to cover all of that. Because the length of the lashachot that this outer chatzer, this outer court has, is 50 amot. And that makes up a total of 100 amot alongside or parallel to the bayit. Pasuk tet u'mitachat ha'leshachot ha'ile ha'mevi mi'hakadim v'olahina mi'hachatzer ha'chitzona. So Rashi says again, Rashi says he doesn't know what we're talking about here. If it's talking about there were certain tunnels or rooms underneath, or if it means that on the eastern side of this court there were rooms as well, and that because the mountain goes up, so the ones on the eastern side were lower than the other ones because they were on the rise of the mountain. So maybe that's what it was talking about. So Rashi is unclear. Rashi says he's unclear about that. And there was another group of leshachot on the east side, facing the extra structure that we saw and facing the binyan of the bayit itself. And you have a path before them, like for the ones of the north, as long as they are wide, having the same length and width as the other one, or length and depth as the other one, or width and depth. In other words, it's matching on the east side as well. And then also the ones on the south side. You have coming from the east, you have the entrance, you have the corresponding matching walls along all of the way there as well. So it seems like you have it going around. You have it on the north side, on the east side, and on the south side. Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Eli lishchot hatzafon, lishchot hadarom, asher opnei hagizra, heina lishchot hakodesh. So he says to him, the malach who's showing him all this, and has by and large been doing it silently, just showing him the vision and pointing and making sure he understands it and keeps it carefully in mind. So he says to him, these lishachot are the... I apologize, I continually forget that there are bells being rung in this building that I'm working in. So, Heina lishchot hakodesh sheyichlu sham hakohanim asher krovim la'Hashem kodshei hakadoshim, sham yanichu kodshei hakadoshim, v'mincha v'achatat v'Hashem ki ha'makom kadosh. So he says to him, the northern and southern lishachot, which are facing the extra, the gizra, the vacant space that had another building in it, so those are in the kodesh. The Radak here points out that these are the places where arelim can go. This is a place within the Azara. You have these lishachot, and those are places where kodesh kodashim can be eaten, and therefore the kohanim could leave in these lishachot. They could leave bzar hakodesh and come back to it and leave it there, and they would be able to eat it. But in the Ezrat kohanim, which was inside Ezra Israel, there were the offices, and that's where they would eat their kodashim. Even though in the whole Azar you could have eaten it, but that's what they used to do, and this is where they used to eat their kodesh kodashim. But they wouldn't go out that way to outside of the Beit HaMikdash. And they'll leave there their begadim, as the Radak says, that you, when a Kohen wore the special begadim, he wore them only for service, only when he went into the Azara. So even though it's true that while he's in the Azara and then he's going to go out, he could theoretically go directly out. But what they would do is they would go to the Shachot, they would change their clothing, and then leave by the way that everybody else left, because once their clothing were off, they were like everybody else. That's an important halachic concept, that kohanim are not fully kohanim in terms of the service in the Beit HaMikdash when they're not wearing their big day kohanah. That's why a kohen who does avod in the Beit HaMikdash, does service in the Beit HaMikdash without the proper garments, is considered like a zar, like a non-kohen who's doing avodah. So they would going to these lishachot, put on their begadim, and then they go out. When they were changing back, they would go out among the people, and they wouldn't go into the Ezra Kohanim to the Ezrakonim at all, unless they had to do smicha, putting your hands on top of a korban, or slaughtering a korban, or doing tenufa, or any of those things. And they couldn't, when they were in Bigdei Kehuna, touch any of the regular people, because that already could create tumah and issues with that. So that's what they would do. They would have the shlachot and do it there. Part of what the picture that this lays out for us is the sense that the Kohanim had to be aware of sort of a dual experience. In other words, while they had to have a good relationship with the people around them, their job was to teach Torah and to be involved with the people and to be relating well to the people, so that people would come to them when they had issues, and they would come to them with korbanot, and they would come to them to make amends in the Beit HaMikdash with Hashem. At the same time, they had to, especially when they were serving the Beit HaMikdash, observe certain separations between them, and they had to make sure that they understood how the Tum and Tara issues would affect their ability to interact with them. Pasuk Ted Vav, Vechilat Midot HaBayit HaPnimi, and then in the vision, they finished seeing the measurements of the inner house. Vehotziyani Derech HaShar, he takes me out of the gate, Asher Panav Derech HaKadim, out of the eastern gate, Medado Saviv Saviv, and he measures it all around. So now, in these Pesachim, we're going to get the first hint, though. We haven't been, and I can see this candidly, but we haven't been following all of these numbers as carefully as we could. It's hard to do without visual aids, and it's hard to do in general. But here we get to a piece that's much clearer than that I think is clearer than the rest, and that puts us in mind something that will become even more stark and more obvious in the later chapters, in chapters Mem Vav, Mem Zayin, and Mechet, about the size that we're talking about. Because here it says, he starts measuring him. In other words, he's given a picture of every little piece of it, and we've seen the numbers we've gone along, but we haven't perhaps kept full track of them. So now he gives them a vision of the whole thing. Madad ruach gadim b'knei hamida, chamesh meot kanim b'knei hamida saviv. So he measures from the eastern direction with his k'nei hamida. So remember that the k'nei hamida had six amot to it. And he measures chamesh meot kanim, 500 of those, b'knei hamida saviv, 500 of those with this k'nei hamida. Now the JPS English has it as, he measured the east side with the measuring rod, 500. Then they put in square brackets the word cubits, in rods, by the measuring rod. So they seem to be assuming that it's 500 amot, 500 cubits. And until now, there's been a lot of things that have been measured by amot, by cubits. But here it says, chamesh meot kanim. And Rashi, at least on Pasuk Chaf, which we'll get to, but Rashi says, no, it's shloshet alafim or shloshet alafim amah. Every direction, you have 3,000 amot, and it's 3,000 amot because it's 500 of the kanim. So if it's 3,000 amot, time to start remembering our numbers, that's 4,500 to 6,000 feet, depending on the number you use for an amah, depending on the size of an amah, which means it's somewhere in the area of a mile, a little bit more, a little bit less, a mile in each direction, right? It's a mile to the east. Then Pasuk Yizayin, Madad Ruach HaTzafon Chamesh Meot Kanim B'Knei Hamida Saviv. On the north inside, it's the same thing. Ed Ruach HaDarom Madad Chamesh Meot Kanim B'Knei Hamida. On the southern side, Savav El Ruach Hayam, that comes around to the western side. Madad Chamesh Meot Kanim B'Knei Hamida. Arba Pasuk Chaf, Arba Ruchot Midado. He measures it all out to the four directions. Chomalo Saviv Saviv, with a wall all around it. Orech Chamesh Meot, Verochav Chamesh Meot, and you measure on the four sides at a wall completely surrounding it, 500, and then the JPS again puts in cubits, but I think it's a mistake. I think it's kanim, I think it's rods, verochav chamesh meot, and its width is chamesh meot, again, rods, to separate the holy, the area that's holy, from the area that's not, meaning the azara or the harabayit, from not. Now we're going to see later, right, Rashi says it's Chomat HaChel HaMakefet Kol HaHar, all of what we call Har HaBayit. We're going to see later on that the area of the land of Israel that seems to be dedicated or set aside for Yerushalayim and the Kohanim and the Kohanim is going to be much larger than we would expect it. So here is the first indication, if we read it right, and I think it is, and it answers a question that I've raised a couple of times before. I think what it's saying is that the area of Har HaBayit is expected to be. Now, how are you going to expand the mountain? That's a good question. Maybe the mountain will expand some way. We will expand it, or it will just expand on its own. It's not clear what's going to happen with that, but the mountain seems to include an area of 3,000 amot on each side, which would be 4,500 to 6,000 feet, somewhere in the area of a mile. 6,000 feet is a mile and a fifth, and 4,500 feet is is about 4/5 of a mile, but somewhere about 4/5 square, or a mile and an eighth squares, which is something around. I mean, you can do the math, but it's something around a square mile, a mile on each side, for Har Habayit. And part of what is exciting about seeing that in Yechezkel to me is that one of the questions I've always asked myself is that granted that the Har Habayit used to be able to support the Jews of the time of Beit Rishon and Beit Sheni. So in Beit Rishon, it wasn't such a challenge because it doesn't seem like all that many people came, right? So when Yoshiyahu makes a Pesach, it's like the most remarkable Pesach ever, and there weren't that many people. In Beit Sheni as well. So then it seems like more and more people came for Korbanot and for Chagim and for things like that, so they probably had more people. But there weren't that many Jews in the world as compared to today. So if you grant the time, we're going to have a rebuilt Har Habayit, rebuilt Beit HaMikdash, and you're going to have people presumably excited about it, presumably interested in partaking of the Beit HaMikdash. So even if we only have 12, 15 million Jews in the world today, it's still much more than there was back then. So I wondered how you're going to be able to support it. So if I had gone through each of the pieces of the Bayit, it might have helped as well. Some of those numbers were large as well. But this at least shows Har Habayit being a mile square is certainly an area that can support and that can handle many more people than the areas that we talk about today or that you see delineated in the Mishnayot and Midot, where it talks about the structure of the second Bayit. So we have a partial answer already here in these Psukim. We'll see more of it in the upcoming Prakim. First, there's going to be now a discussion of dedication of that Bayit and the role that Bayit will play, but the technicalities, many of the technicalities, not all of them, but many of the technicalities of the structure have been dealt with. For all that, we haven't necessarily done the best job of it, but you have the basic structure, you're going to have offices around, you're going to have a heichal, you're going to have this and the sizes and all of those things going on. And then the sizes being the interesting and the exciting thing about it, because it does point in the direction of a house that recognized the growth since then, and it's just remarkable to see Yechezkel. Certainly, if anybody made the mistake of thinking of Yechezkel as being somebody who just has visions of his own, it's remarkable to see that Yechezkel is able to anticipate or to imagine a Bayit and a structure and a Har Habayit that is much larger than anything that he was talking about in his day, and yet would be an appropriate size for some time around now. And we can close today's chapter hoping and longing for the day that we will see this brought out into reality. Have a great day.